host.
We didn't even come up with a name yet, but so my name is Jatam.
My name is Nikki. Hello.
Yeah. And we're just going to kind of ramble for the first one, test it out.
Yes, that's a good idea. So, what are we doing here?
We are starting a podcast.
Wow. That's interesting.
Right now.
Yeah. All right. And what are we talking about?
How valuable it is to be acknowledged as combat veterans with PTSD or really any mental health considerations, and the efforts in trying to receive quality care and healing. And how, for me especially, how important it was to have recognition or acknowledgement while I was getting my care and doing all my healing stuff and just kind of in general in life living with PTSD.
That's
all. What about for you?
Yeah, no, that, yes.
Is that too much?
Yes, yes, and all that. No, I'm, yeah, and that is right. Like being acknowledged and like how much, like with PTSD, how it's so easy to isolate yourself and not even try to get acknowledge. But all the while suffering without anybody there to actually lend a hand, to help. So yeah, you need to be acknowledged. You need to feel like you have services and feel like you have people that are helping you.
Great. I concur.
Yes. Because that doesn't, I mean, yeah. And then how, so, because with me, people tell me I was lying. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I'm lying. Like, what do you do when that, when the big bad government tells you you're lying about something that happened while on their watch? And then you go, okay, well, I guess that didn't happen. And then you suffer, and the rest of your life, like you said today, you said that you, your life is a certain way because you have PTSD. And you're depressed, but that's because of the PTSD. So you have all of these, like, things that have happened due to something that you were just like, I'm going to go help people and I'm going to be a vet. Or I'm going to go join the military and help people. And then things happen and then people tell you that you're lying about things that happen.
Yep.
That sucks.
I don't know why, but liar is, like, a common word with MST. Well, I think it's sexual trauma, period. I don't quite know why, where that comes from as the go-to.
Well, it's easy because it's not public and they can say you're just making it up. Or you're, you know what I mean? Like people, no, there's not a lot of people around most of the time that see you, like, see the event, see things happen.
Yeah.
So, of course, nobody saw it. And you're lying.
Yeah. Well, so my sexual trauma actually was, I didn't disclose my sexual trauma. My assailant did. in an attempt to cover it up. He told command that I was lying about him raping me when I had actually never even spoken a single word about the sexual assaults. Like, I was so much like, nope, I'm not going to be sexualized by any of these people in uniform. And he was the one that told his command that I'm lying about the rape. So that's how it actually became, you know, became information outside of the room that it occurred in.
Oh, wow. Well,
so it's, but I think it's really interesting that, like, that particular word, liar.
No, yeah. And that I had the person that, whoever does, like, the comp and pen stuff or whatever, they said to me, they said, they think you're lying. Then I had somebody else say, no, no one would ever say that. You're lying about that. I'm like, I'm not, okay, I'm not, I mean, what do I do then? I'm like, so I shut my mouth for 20 years. I just shut up and didn't say.
So I think we got cut off there.
Oh, we're back?
Yeah, sure.
We're back. We're live. So what were we saying? I think we were talking about liar, the word liar, in yes. the whole context of everything.
Yes.
Well, and I think that's also a way, like, it's like a whole, like, who wants to, like, approach it? You know what I mean? And calling you a liar is, like, a way to, like, keep you quiet. Mm-hmm. Because nobody wants to really, like, delve into it because it gets messy and ugly and nobody wants to do that. So they call you a liar so they'll shut you up. That's how I felt. Like, I felt like nobody wanted to deal with it. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody mm-hmm. wanted to hear about it. Of course, we wouldn't do that. You know, nobody in our whatever would do that. But they do. They did. Mm-hmm. And then, but if you call you a liar, that makes you, shuts you up and shuts you down and makes you feel terrible.
Yeah. And the irony of it is the acknowledgement that it happened would actually preserve the individual to continue on with military service in tremendous ways. Like, I had a very unique experience in that my command team never, my battalion and below command team never pressed me to say anything, but they acknowledged that it had happened without me ever even needing to say anything. And they stood around me. Like, I can't even say that they stood by my side. Like, they completely insulated me as much as they possibly could to Brigade, who was intimidating and harassing me. So, like, just, and I was able to continue on and become a jump master and take on the battalion senior medic position because I knew that without ever even having to say it, that experience was acknowledged. And I think it's so retarded that the knee jerk to MST is, no, you're a liar.
And mine was, no, yeah, mine was a little bit different, whereas I was, like, deployed for, like, 6 months. Mm-hmm. It happened there, and it was easy enough to say you're a liar. Because we were never, I was a reservist, so I was there.
Yeah.
It happened. And being a 19-year-old in the middle of the desert with 50 men that were double my age and then having that happen. And then where do you go with that? Like, mm-hmm. no, you're, you know. It was very demoralizing. And then for the way it happened and then for people to say again, then when I trained, I didn't say anything to anybody for years. And then when I did, they said, like you said, you mm-hmm. know, I'm a liar. And so I had no support while I was there. Mm-hmm. I had no support after I was there. And nobody would, I had me in that. I didn't tell anybody. And so, yes, acknowledgement would have helped. And it would have helped me go on because once I got back from the desert, I got out of the military. I say I did everything I could to get out. Like, I was an asshole to everybody, just so they wouldn't want me around anymore because I didn't want to be there anymore. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know how to not be there. I did everything I could, and I didn't get a dishonorable discharge. My discharge is fine, whatever. I got whatever they get, you know, honorable discharge. But, yeah, I couldn't go on anymore. I couldn't go on and survive in that function in that particular arena because the people that had abused me were there every single day. I had to see them. And as like a 19-year-old again, what do you do about that? Mm-hmm. You know, when you have all these men that are older than you and you're there in the middle of and you're vulnerable. And there was a lot of alcohol. We were in the desert, but we got to drink in the middle of a war. We were, yes.
You guys were definitely Air Force.
We were so Air Force. We had like good food. We had a beer tent. We had all that. But like I said, you know, edit it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things I feel like a lot of veterans get caught up on is that you don't become the shiny turd that maybe you want to be after something like this happens. And then you spiral out of control, and the recognition that it happened as a result of the MST and as a result of trying to live with this idea that it didn't happen and that everybody else is also trying to lie to themselves that it didn't happen. And you're in this really confusing environment. It's just not, it's just toxic. And it makes people, I shouldn't say it makes people do, but it creates an environment where it's acceptable to just spiral out instead of going, no, wait a minute, this is bullshit. That fucking happened. And it's wrong that everybody's running around like it didn't happen.
Absolutely. Like, I'm just sitting here thinking about, like, yeah, that, like, I'm reliving, like, everything, thinking about how everybody, yeah, just talked around everything, you can't say anything, and made it very clear to me that I wasn't going to say anything. And if I did, like, it wasn't going to be good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was implicit that I need to keep my mouth shut. So... yeah, it becomes very toxic because you have to lie on top of lie, on top of this, on top of that, on top of not trying to face anything, and nobody wants to face any of it. And at the time it happened, it was, for me, it was, how many years ago? Like, 1991.
Yeah.
There was no Me Too. It was like, no, that's you. You were not acknowledging it or not. Nobody wanted to hear anything about it. And you don't want to hear anything about anybody who you're supposed to be in this camaraderie. You're supposed to be these good people doing these good things. Nobody's going to do anything bad. Nobody does anything bad. And you pretend like that's your, you know, nope, nobody did it. So as a 19-year-old, I took on all that.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to try to live my life. And you're right. If somebody just would have said to me at that point, I think probably my whole entire life would be completely different. Yes, it happened. And yes, we're going to help you. And yes, there is support.
Yeah.
That's all I really need. And I didn't get any of that. I got pretty much shut your face. Don't talk about it.
And I've talked to some other veterans who are having different manifestations of PTSD, and they're kind of told, like, oh, you're crazy, that has nothing to do with PTSD, or that's not, what's really going on, we're going to treat this or we're going to treat that, instead of treating the PTSD. And even for them, like, just having acknowledgement, like, yeah, that's real, that's totally possible, that alleviates so much of the traumatic, energetic, like, suffering.
Yes. Because, I've seen vets when I've been talking to them, and I've just acknowledged it, and it completely changes their tone, their demeanor, everything.
Yeah. All of a sudden, they're sitting up a little bit taller, and...
yeah.
They're just able to have a little bit more flow to their conversation.
Yes, they can talk to you, mm-hmm. They feel... I don't even know what the word is, but they
feel seen.
Yeah, that is a lot of it. So the little simplest thing that we can do for people,
yep,
we avoid, like, the plague. Nobody wants to do it. We're not going to say it. Because then what if you say it? Then you know what? You have to deal with it.
Yep.
You have to see that person in a different way. It's just too difficult, I guess, it's too daunting of a task.
Like, yeah.
You have to help somebody. And then there's also blame.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you going to blame? you have to blame somebody because that's what you do in the military, or, you know,
yeah.
you have to blame someone.
Well, and that's the crazy thing is I kind of am on board with DOD. I know there was like that memo that came out a couple years ago that recognized sexual assault is more or less a casualty of war. I'm not saying that human beings, like the service members that survive these assaults, are the casualty, but that this horrific thing is in fact a creation of war. War is essentially trying to assert power on somebody else, and we put this concept into service members' minds. And sometimes the mind gets warped and takes that on into really ugly ways. And, you know, I know for me at least, my assailant was an individual who definitely didn't get care for his combat-related injuries that were not, you know, as visible. And at the end of the day, sexual assault isn't about sex. It's about
power.
Yeah. And having that sense of power over another human being.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that it is. It's
wait, so this memo thing said that war creates this? So, like, it's
kind
okay?
Not necessarily that it's okay, but it's an assumed risk that is a part of the ongoing combat. I'd have to pull it, and I should probably plug it in the comment, the description of this. But there's a memo that was a lot of outrage amongst, like, MST advocate programs a couple years ago that was like an internal DOD memo.
That were okay.
Not saying that it was not taking a stance of it being right or wrong, but that it is
just
there's a correlation between us being in war and more or less creating that kind of that disease.
Hmm.
If disease is even the appropriate word for it. I don't like that one too much.
But I'm just thinking about, like, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that. Because that's, like, that's warped. Like, who even says that? Like, what? How could you even say that? Like, who was trying to say that? What were they trying to say? Or who were they trying
I think just
to,
from, like, an operational perspective, that the non-visible combat injuries kind of contribute to sexual assault being an issue within the ranks during war.
When did they have a way to fix that?
Well, you know how it is. You gotta say, oh, here's the issue, and then come up with a solution.
Yeah.
I think by far DOD has done tremendous things over the last 10, 15 years to address mental health. And
sorry, Sandra. That, I don't know. Just that whole...
Yeah, it's definitely a harsh pill to look at.
Yeah. Well, and my thing came back up with, there was a woman, who was it? She was like a senator or something, too,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about. And she said, this happened to me, but I never said anything about it.
Yeah.
And that's when I felt like acknowledged by her, because I was, me too, you know, like that, not to be like trite, me too, but... When I saw her saying that, I was like, it happened to me too. And I, like, didn't say anything for years and years and years. And you didn't say anything for years and years and years. You're saying something. I don't know what prompted her to say. I don't know what the exact... Do you remember? You know I'm talking about that, right? Do you?
Are you talking about the Illinois one? Or are you talking about... I think it's the East Coast senator who's kind of...
I think it was an East Coast
taking
senator.
On the act to have... Or the legislation to have... MST, part of the judicial territory outside of. So, like, so obviously this isn't scripted.
Right. We need some work.
The having MSTs that happen within the DOD be tried outside of the DOD.
Is that who you're talking about? That's a good idea. I don't exactly know what she was doing, but she was talking about something, and she said, here's what happened to me. I was scared to say anything for it 20 years or whatever had happened, and now she finally came out, and she was saying, here's what happened.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I know. But yeah, if someone would just sort of said, okay, yeah, yep.
Yeah, and that acknowledgement, like, empowered you to come forward and get your own benefits in line.
Yeah. Which was a very difficult, probably a whole different podcast.
And is still difficult.
It is, yeah.
So tell me, you're going to tell me what your the status is at the moment.
So I submitted the claim, whatever, which was like a horrific, it was hard. It was very difficult to do that. Because I've already done it before. And you have the whole, like, shame of the, like, oh. I know I'm not a liar, but I know what people said to me. And that makes you feel horrible.
Yep.
So when I'm doing it again, I'm like, oh, my God, are they going to say these things to me again? Along with all the, you know, the original trauma, you have this whole other pile of trauma that's, like, sitting on you. Like, who's going to say what? I can see the faces of every single person that's.
Yeah.
That I encountered.
Yeah.
Of them saying just as much as I can see when it happened. You know what I mean? Right. You see, it's like they're all there in front of you. So that's not a fun thing to go through again. And then you have people saying, like, why are you doing this? Why do you even need to do this?
Yeah.
Because I want to feel better. Like, I want to, like, get it out there. I want to, like... Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people are like, you're just... It's for money. You want money. No, I don't want money. Like, I... No.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to get on my soapbox for a second on that one. Because I feel like there's a lot of people who pay for disability insurance with a premium amount that is linked to money. We also... as service members, paid for a disability insurance with an amount, but it was connected to however many years of service and whatever worst case scenario that could happen. And so why is it any different for us as service members to put in our disability insurance claim than it would be for any Aflac or Wells Fargo life insurance, disability insurance? Like, it is no different. We paid the premium.
Paid the premium as in going, signing up and
right.
joining the service. Sight unseen, too. Like, I joined and I was like, yeah, I'm never going to, you know, that wasn't my ever thinking, but. I knew in the back of my mind it might happen, but yeah, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's true. I've never thought about it that way. And then, yeah, and then I put in and be like, hey, dudes, like, something happened, but I felt bad. Like, but you wouldn't, like, if you're right. Like, if I were just, like, a person with a premium or whatever, I'd be like, hell yeah, give me my money.
Which is hilarious, because, like, whatever $10 or whatever it is to have disability insurance tacked on, that is so much less
than what we were
doing.
Like, we could be dead.
Yeah, but, you know, I would rather pay $10 a month for the rest of my fucking life than to have PTSD. Any day of the week.
You're absolutely right. And I've never, ever thought about it like that. Like, that's absolutely true. Like, my life has been forever changed. Yeah, give me $10 a week. Give me $100 a week. You're right. And, like, the things that I've gone through and the things that I've experienced and the things that I've put other people through as a result of my PTSD and my MSD.
And as the person who is living and healing with PTSD. Again, with that whole acknowledgement thing, like, acknowledging that you became a pretty ugly individual as well, that is tremendously healing on top of it. And just kind of hearing you say that, like, the person that I became, and the way that I
affected other people negatively. That,
that the way I still affect people negatively. The way I still do things negatively. You know, it's like you don't get over this shit. Doesn't go away. No. And when somebody does, when no one acknowledges it, and you know, I think about it. I'm like, why do I need people to acknowledge me? What do I need to acknowledge? You do. Like, you just need someone to say, "Hey, it happened. Let's deal with it."
Yep.
No one's ever said that to me. Like, ever. I mean, recently, yes, because I reached out for help, but I didn't reach out for help because nobody wanted me, no one wanted to hear me before.
Yeah.
They wanted me to be quiet.
Let's talk about, like, the first time you told me, if you want to.
I don't even remember. I was in, a deep, dark place there. Do you remember when I told you?
Yeah. So I had, in kind of a class type of forum, I was kind of talking people through self-Reiki.
Yeah.
And there were a number of sexual assault survivors that I was aware of in that
group. Yeah.
And then there were a number of male service members who had been in the peripheral of a sexual assault in that group.
Yeah.
But you had pulled me off to the side and you were like, hey, this is something that I went through and this is where I'm at in my healing process and where I'm at in the process of.
I don't remember telling you. Isn't that weird? I, block out a lot of stuff. Like, I've become, the master of, just going through life and, blocking out things that I really don't want to. And at that time, I mean, I was fucked up. Mm-hmm. I was, help me. My body was, aching.
Yeah.
Since, though, I put in my claim.
Mm-hmm.
My body. I mean, I still got, I'm getting older, but, it's not like it was. I was in pain.
Yeah.
My arms hurt. My back hurt.
Yeah.
And after I got, just think about that right there. I was going through physical pain, physical, all this shit was going on with me. So think about people that have this and it's just a bottle up in them and no one will say, yep, it's happening to you. And so they're experiencing all kinds of shit for no reason.
Yeah.
Because no one will say anything to acknowledge their pain.
Actually, because I'm about a year into rehabbing some of my physical injuries from the assault. And then, compounding it with not acknowledging that I was in physical pain for 10 years.
I think we become, champions at not acknowledging things.
Yeah.
Forgetting things.
Yeah.
And I've gone through, now I'm going through talking to someone about all of this. And things are coming up that I had forgotten,
mm-hmm.
that I just put away.
Dude, I legit, one anniversary of being alive, because also a component of my assault was that the person tried to kill me. So I have an alive anniversary, like a lot of my other combat PTSD peers. But one alive anniversary season, I parked at the mall. And I could not find my car. So my friend that I had gone with and her son had to literally drive every single lane of that parking lot, the mall parking lot.
To look for your car.
Yeah, and I'm just hitting my button. And she's like, you know, dude, I think this is kind of bad. Something bad is happening.
Don't you find, though, that goofy stuff like that happens, and then you catch yourself, and you're like, well, just weird shit like that. It comes out in different ways, and, you forget stuff like that, or you forget. I catch myself a lot of times just forgetting simple shit or big shit, and then you come back to, ugh, and it's ugly. You just, sorry, I, kind of got off track.
No, you're all good.
Did you find your car?
I did. Yeah, I found my car. Dude, I found my car.
Right? Dude, where's my car? Yeah. So, there's a lot of junk that just piles up on you.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm just, like, pushing it off. Like, I start, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just starting at the top and just, like, trying to push it off and trying to get mm-hmm. it off and trying to get to where I can go, all right, and get really, like, just even talking about this right now. Like, this is mm-hmm. a big deal. Like, I haven't talked about this. And I even now can't really talk about it.
Yeah.
I talk around it.
But what's hilarious is you went from, like, literally being in the fetal position in the corner of the couch to now, like, sitting up. And
I'm a little bit better.
Yeah.
I was in the fetal position. Yeah. You're right. But, yeah, because you do need someone to bring you out, bring that out and help you out. Like, I
yeah.
can. Yeah.
I went to an awesome retreat this last year after the anniversary with the Sparta Project. And Rabbi Mike Salonius says this one thing throughout it. Like, I need you more than you need me.
I get that.
Yeah. Which is kind of like, again, the concept behind this. Like, for me, knowing that the shit that I had to crawl through, being out there and someone else being able to feel acknowledged and start some healing and just be able to sit up instead of yeah. being in the fetal position. Like right. that's, for me, that's what is replenishing. Because it's not even so much like, oh yeah, I'm doing all this healing, and it actually really sucks doing all this healing.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
No.
It's not anything that, like you said, give me $10 a week for the rest of my life and I'll pay it.
Yeah. Yeah.
To not have to look like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. So, what I think about it, like when people say, oh, you're just after the money, you're just after the money, you know?
Because what a lot of people don't realize is, like, it's not even necessarily about the dollar amount per month. It's that I get to have care for this for the rest of my life. And I have that acknowledgement that it's there.
It's the acknowledgement. It's the care. It's the support. It's mm-hmm. the, I need help. Help me.
Mm-hmm.
I need help. Mm-hmm. And I never said that to anybody about this. I've never, ever even felt that I could. Like, I can't say, help me, help me. I need help for this.
Mm-hmm.
Because simply nobody wanted to help.
Yeah. And like I was really fucking lucky. Like I had a VA employee who worked at the TMC that I worked at, who was like, hey, sign this paper. And I was just like, I worked with him before, trusted him, signed the paper, and he put everything in. And when I was I hadn't even ETS'd out yet, and I was doing an evaluation for anxiety because I didn't even have a diagnosis in there. I just had the medications that my PA was treating me with for not being able to sleep, anxiety attacks, all that other stuff, without an actual diagnosis in there. And that's when the evaluator started asking me some really weird questions, like, hey, so what did you have for dinner that night before? And when's the last time you ate that? And I, like, threw up right there in front of him, just thinking about eating that fucking meal again. And he was like, yeah, so, you got PTSD, girl. I was like, okay. So for, like, 3-4 years, I just ran around being this fucking ball of rage with stripes on her fucking chest, which is like probably the most, it made me a better NCO. It made me a better service member to suppress it and to just live with it.
And be, oh, absolutely, because you're fucking pissed.
Yeah.
All the time. All yeah. the time. I remember driving my car and my honking, and I was like, I was full of rage. So you take a person, you put them out in public, you know. I wasn't in the military. Like, in the military, that's okay to do that.
Yeah.
I was a reservist, so I came back to whatever I did. Well, for 6 months, I sat in my mom and dad's house and drank every single night.
So you kind of were still in active duty.
Yes.
It's kind of what we do in garrison.
Yeah, kind of like active duty. Yes, yes. But I was in
just minus the strippers.
Yes, but I was in my mom and dad's, my bedroom at my mom and dad's house. And I did not know what else to do because I was pissed.
Yeah.
But I knew, like, I didn't want to go out there and, like, I would have got my ass in big trouble. So we have all these this, oh my gosh.
It's all clicking now.
But I feel like, okay, wait, like, it should have clicked, like, a long time ago. Like, for me, especially. But now it's like, oh, yes, it's all clicking. Because I see these people on the daily that this is what's happening to them.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to be dumb enough to, and not dumb enough, maybe smart enough, I don't know, to hide myself and drink wine coolers. That was the wine cooler age.
It's so, come back now. Oh. The White Claw.
Circle. Yeah, ours were a lot cheaper. And like Bartles and James, you know. Like the 4-pack. Do you remember that? Did you ever have that? But anyway, yeah. So I bought like 6 4-packs and sat there and drank them until I fell asleep. Because you can't sleep. You can't. Yeah.
Fuck, I just went on a cruise. I couldn't even sleep on the cruise.
You couldn't?
No. I had nightmares the entire night. Oh. And I mean, I've shared with you, and we'll kind of dig into it more, but like, I've done a lot of healing and introspection and all this stuff.
Like I said, this doesn't go away.
No. No.
That's what we should call it, $10. Something about to do with 10. You know what I mean?
I like it. Yeah.
Like,
I'll give you $10 for your brain.
Or something. Or $10 not to feel this way. $10. There's something with 10. They're 10. Yeah. We have to get something clicky like that. But yeah. Hell, like I said, I'd pay $100, I'd pay $1,000 not to have to go through all this that I've gone through for the past however many years. And it's just now clicking. I'm fucking 50. You know how? And I've gone through this. I was 19.
Yeah.
And too scared to, like, acknowledge any of it. I didn't acknowledge it. So how can anybody else acknowledge it? You know? I forgot about it. I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to talk about it. And my body's finally like, you need to talk about it. You need to get this out or you're going to die. Like, that's how I felt. When I first started talking to you, I felt like I was going to die. Like, mm-hmm. I had no idea what was going on with me, but it was so bad. I would just, like, ugh. At night, I would just sit here and try and rub my shoulders. I'd try to roll around on the floor. I couldn't do anything. I was a miserable mess. And ever since, like, I got my thing out, and I actually, the guy that at the DAB, is it DAB? I always do it wrong. DVA, DAB. Disability.
Disabled and
the vet.
Veterans thing. Of America. DVA.
Yeah. I always do it the wrong way. Sorry.
I had to say it out loud too.
Right. So anyway, he was extremely helpful. And if I didn't have that, but I remember I sat in his office and cried. And he's like, all right. You know? And he was helpful. And if it weren't for him, like, I wouldn't. Like, now, right now, I feel like I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you said you threw up. I feel like I, like, this does this to your body. This is insane that, like, all of these crazy emotions and all these things happen, and physically, mentally, and we're just supposed to ignore it and act like it didn't happen.
$10 to look away.
Oh, that's good. But wait, you don't want to look away. No, you want to pay $10 to not look away. Wait, you want to pay $10 to not have this ever even happen. Also, to look away is good. Yes. Okay. I had to go. Did you see the reel?
Well, it's like less than 30 years to click.
Yeah, it did. We could have been in this for a long hour. I'd be like, no. Yeah. Did you see the wheels turning? I was working on it. I got it. I think I like them. Maybe.
All right, so maybe we'll come back to $10 to look away.
We'll think about that. Oh, man.